James Taylor is a six-time Grammy Award winner. He is among the best-selling musical artists of all time, with more than 100 million records sold. He and singer Carly Simon were married, and they became a famous couple for the decade or so that the marriage lasted. And Taylor Swift was named after him. James Taylor's also had his demons, depression and drug addiction at the very height of his fame. His popularity since that heyday, though, continues to be substantial. Albums that have regularly just gone gold and concerts that routinely sell out across the world. He's bringing his all-star band here next month for shows in Auckland and Wellington. Hello, James. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks, Jim. Where are you speaking from?
Auckland in New Zealand.
Wonderful, wonderful. I've got great memories of Auckland and the harbor there too, you know, sailing in the harbor a couple of times in the past. So, I'm really lucky. I'm in Western Massachusetts right now, just trying to pack my trunk and get on the road.
It is lovely to talk to you. We have limited time, I know. So, with your permission, James, I think we can assume you come here with a great band. I remember when you toured with Carole King, the band was fantastic. I know you're armed with visual material to accompany your anecdotes on stage. I've seen you do that. You're a charming storyteller and you have all those great songs. People are going to flock to see you. I'd really like to ask you the questions I've always wanted to know the answers to about you. Does that suit?
I'll see what I can do.
In Time magazine, on the front cover in 1971, Time magazine was the most important magazine in the world then. You are on that front cover of the most important magazine in the world. There's a drawing of you, a portrait with the caption, "The New Rock, Bittersweet and Low." And Carly Simon sees the cover, decides to marry you, and does. You're a great big recording star by then. It's all happened so quickly. The Beatles, 2 years earlier, have signed you up to their record label as the first act on it outside themselves, from memory. They're on the album that you make there. They help you out. You're both recording in the same place. I mean, this is pinch yourself stuff, isn't it? Am I dreaming? How did you manage it, even with your talent? Because emotionally back then, James, you were intermittently in bad shape and you were taking very strong drugs when available.
Yeah, it's true. It's an interesting thing. You know, you hope for recognition, you hope for attention, you know, and to get your music heard but you can never really understand what it's going to be like to sort of go from a sort of a private person to being a product. That's presented a number of people with really really it's been a challenge for a number of people in my generation, you know, a number of artists who were really overwhelmed by fame and by success, really.
Yeah. Well, you got clean, James, I know, at age 35, which isn't uncommon, getting the monkey off your back in your mid-30s, late-30s. You gained life and you gained honesty. Did you lose anything by it?
You know, that's a really good question. I worried certainly at the time whether or not there was a sort of a formula to my, to my process, and that whether or not substances were an important part of it, and that it wasn't gonna work anymore. You know, if after I got clean, But you know what it basically comes down to is you can't write any more songs when you're dead either. So it was sink or swim. And grateful. I'm hugely grateful that I had people who who helped me and that got me into the program and got me clean. I think that there's a connection between what music does for you and what drugs and alcohol do. It's sort of both are ways of getting out of the prison of yourself in a way. It's both are sort of in a way therapeutic, and I think it's probably true of most people who are addicted that they're self-medicating at some level. It's really not about celebration. It's sort of more primal than that. And of course, after a while, it just turns into a losing game. But it's an interesting point, and a good question. I was uneasy about what was, aside from being, profoundly uncomfortable, but I was really uneasy about what was going to happen to my music and my live performance and touring and stuff. And
yeah.
If you're addicted and you get clean, you're going to get a new life. And you can't anticipate what that's going to be, but it was such a gift, I'm grateful for every bit of it. What happened basically had to happen on some level.
I understand. Well, alcoholics talk about being born two drinks short of normal, and I assumed that a version of that applied to addicts. The reason I ask that is that, as well as that wonderful voice of yours and your skill with a guitar, you had a very attractive ability, have always kept it actually, in those early songs, though, to turn ordinary experiences into mystical ones. I mean, a lot of people go to Carolina in their minds in pretty mundane ways. You went there in the company of a holy host, James.
You definitely picked up on that. It was true. It was a song about being homesick, about missing home, about really the impossibility of going back, about all of that happening in spite of having essentially won the lottery. What an amazing turn of events to have the Beatles open the door.
Yeah.
But you're right. It was. I still play that song most nights. I don't know what it is, but it's sort of it's a rock for me. It sets me up, and I always make a connection. Either musical or with the lyric, one way or the other, it takes me back.
Of course,
takes me back in that place where I wrote the tune.
You made two women very famous in your songs, Suzanne in Fire and Rain, who sadly killed herself while you were in England with the Beatles, but also From Carolina in My Mind, Karen, She's a Silver Sun. How wonderful to be called that in a song. You looked for her without success in later years after the two of you had been together and quite close on the Spanish island of Formentera in the Mediterranean. James, how come you never found her or she you? I mean, she knew who you were. You'd just been with the Beatles. You must have told her she was the muse for a famous song, but you've never found her?
Oh, that's right. I think I may have come close a couple of times, but I just didn't work out. Karen was Danish, and once when I was playing in Copenhagen, I was told that after the show that someone had that she had come back and wanted to visit, wanted to see me, and I guess they turned her away. I never got a chance to, or at least I haven't so far had the chance to catch up with her. But God, so much was packed into such a short period of time in those days. The Beatles had decided to take a break from recording the White Album, and had closed down the studio for a couple of weeks. So I was using the time that they weren't using, basically sort of charging in there and trying to nail down a couple of tracks in between their sessions. So a friend of mine from London and I went down to Formentera and to visit with some people he knew down there, and that's where I met Karen. We had gone across from Formentera to Ibiza, a neighboring island, and missed the last boat back. So we were sitting in a cafe with the seats all up on the tables, you know, and at 3 o'clock in the morning, waiting for the first boat back to Formentera and back to our respective friends. And that song just, she was asleep in a chair in the closed cafe, and the song just materialized. You know, I remember the night.
I hope you get to meet her. I so do. I know I'm going to get a voice on my earpiece shortly saying that's enough time with James. But I want to ask you just quickly about Peter Asher, formerly of the duo Peter and Gordon. I wonder how many listeners will remember them. His sister went out with Paul McCartney. He introduced you to McCartney. He believed in you so much he came to America. In a sense, you made him and he made you. He had tremendous success with you and then Linda Ronstadt. And at the same time, he produced your breakthrough album, one of the great musical partnerships in a way. Are you still in touch with him?
Yeah. Actually, just this week, a couple of times, I am. You know, Peter is still producing, and he's working on a project with Barbara Streisand, I'm hoping to do some recording with her. So we've been talking about that. I'm sure that no matter what had happened to Peter, he would have eventually, you know, had the impact that and the career that he has had. But he definitely brought me along and really protected me through a couple of decades about a 10-year period when I needed, you know, I needed help. So I'm forever in his debt.
You've brought other people along, though. I mean, as well as your own splendid talent. I mean, you coaxed Carole King up on stage. She'd been a top-draw songwriter but a reluctant performer. You've been really instrumental in the lives of others. Just in conclusion, I needed to say that. Hey, a lot of people will be looking forward utterly to your coming, James. Thanks for including us on your itinerary. A real pleasure to be able to chat with you, albeit briefly.
My pleasure, Jim. I'm sorry it was brief, but I hope we get a chance to meet. You're in Auckland now, so if you have any interest in coming to the Spark Arena on April 30th, we'll be there, let me know if I can make that happen.
Oh, bless. I'll consider that invitation. I'll contact the promoter. All right, James, super. Lovely to chat.
You bet. Nice to talk to you too, Jim.